Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
And welcome to Adventures in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital here this evening with Mac Burns, Executive Director of the Clatsop County Historical Society.
And a friend of the show.
Who's had a couple dress rehearsals.
He has.
Just a couple.
He's been on one of the lost episodes that's never aired, but maybe someday it'll air.
Yes, but probably not, because it was dated.
It was dated.
Because it was that day in history.
That's right. Jimmy Pearson, the executive director of the Astoria Public Library.
Thanks for coming back.
Were you chief librarian? Head book guy.
Library director, bookman, like I will take them all.
Lots of labels. But we are glad you're back again. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. This is third?
Technically, it's probably your third time airing or fourth time.
Okay. But I just want to keep track of it because I want the sweater for the fifth.
Yes.
Or the jacket.
Someday. We keep promising, and someday I will actually get that to happen.
It's not going to become part of history.
Well, maybe. Okay, so we get right to the big history highlights.
Let's do it.
Because we've got a guest, and he's going to be filled with stories. Okay, so this is for tomorrow.
Correct. Yep. Monday.
February 1st, 1884, the Oxford Dictionary debuts.
How
exciting is that for you, book guy?
Actually, that's really exciting since I am descended from Noah Webster.
No.
Yes, on my grandmother's side. Her maiden name is Webster. So I have traced my ancestry back through. We share a common ancestor, a guy who was the governor of Connecticut back in the 1600s.
Wow.
I actually do love dictionaries, and I have a Webster second at home.
I'm excited by that. That is the fun fact of the day. Okay, 1892, Mrs. William Astor invites 400 guests to a grand ball at her mansion, thus beginning the use of 400 to describe socially elite people.
Oh.
Part of the 400.
Oh, interesting.
Hmm. And of course, you know, that's connected to us as well, because Astor.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I meant to ask you before we went on the air, what TV station did you work for in Florida?
In Florida, I worked for WJHG in Panama City, Florida.
Oh, then never mind. I had a ABC affiliate started on this day in Florida, and I thought maybe it was going to be yours.
Well, there's hundreds so never in Florida. Mind. Which one?
It was WFTV, Channel 9,
ooh,
ABC.
Somewhere in Florida.
Begins in 1958.
Okay. Well, I was not there then.
I did not. Well, I figured you were not there yet.
No.
Okay. 1968. This is a sad one. Saigon Police Chief Nguyen Ngoc Lon executes the Viet Cong officer Nguyen Van Lem with a pistol shot to the head. The execution is captured by photographer Eddie Adams and becomes an anti-war icon. Every textbook in America about the Vietnam War has this photo where the guy's got the pistol to the guy's head.
Yep.
It's a very iconic photograph.
It does stay with you.
What's always left out, though, and I'm not making a judgment, but just in the interest of history and knowing the whole story, what they never mention in most textbooks when they're showing that photo is that the guy had just killed four Americans. Hmm. And that's why the South Vietnamese guy is shooting him.
There you go.
I mean, yes, trial and arrest and all that good stuff. Instead, he just shoots him right in the head right on the street. But he had just killed three or four Americans in front of the guy.
Oh.
So, but it's still powerful.
Yes.
And becomes an anti-war thing. Okay, 1978. Harriet Tubman becomes the first African-American woman to appear on a U.S. postage stamp.
Oh, that's nice. That's a good one.
I think, okay, right now, $20 bill, should she be on it?
Yes.
Yes.
I think so, too. I'm okay with dropping Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
And I think she'd be a cool one to have on there. Okay. 1979, Ayatollah Khomeini returns to Iran. That wasn't very good. 1982, this was almost going to be my history highlight just for me, just selfishly for me. 1982, Late Night with David Letterman debuts on NBC.
Oh.
And Bill Murray is the first guest.
Oh, how fun.
Now, I was not watching it in 82, but I was watching it by 83. And I would either stay up late because it started at 12:30 at night, or I would tape it and I'd watch it when I got home from school the next day. I love that show.
Yeah.
Wow. So anyway.
That explains a lot.
Well, it does. And I think he changed TV. Mm-hmm. And anyway. Okay. 2003, the Columbia Space Shuttle mission ends in disaster when they were coming back in.
Yes.
So we tend to forget that one because we get wrapped up in the Challenger.
So I was working at WJHG in Florida when that happened. And sadly, we did see some of the, you know, the remnants of that.
Yikes.
Yep.
Did you go live?
We did, yes.
Were you part of the people reporting on it?
Yes.
Wow.
Yep. Lots of news in Florida, as I assume you both know. it is true. All of those things really do happen in Florida.
Florida man.
Yes, they do.
Okay. A little fun fact, or maybe it's not so fun, about the Challenger. Before they got Krista McCullough, the school teacher, you know who they asked to go up? They were going to send Big Bird from Sesame Street.
Oh.
How horrible would that have been?
That would have been awful.
I mean, it's bad enough that that school teacher and six other astronauts, but could you imagine all the school kids watching Big Bird get on that thing and then it blows up? That would have been hideous.
Yes. A school teacher alone was probably pretty hard to take.
But the actor that was Big Bird at the time didn't really see how that was going to work well, so he refused.
Oh,
he
good.
Said, he said, no thanks, not interested.
Yeah.
So, all right. Not a very fun fact. But our history highlight of the day, thing I think had the most impact on history, 1790. The first session of the U.S. Supreme Court. Supreme Court. In the Royal Exchange Building in New York City's Broad Street, the Supreme Court of the United States meets for the first time with Chief Justice John Jay of New York presiding. The U.S. Supreme Court was established by Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution, which took effect in March 1789. In September of that year, the Judiciary Act was passed, implementing Article 3 by providing for 6 justices.
Hmm.
Not 9.
Right.
Not 12. 6, who would serve on the court for life. The President George Washington appointed John Jay to preside as Chief Justice. And in America, I think Americans, we don't know any of these names. This is sad to me. John Rutledge of South Carolina. Mm-hmm. William Cushing. You're nodding like you know this. Do you?
Mm-hmm.
You're nodding. You're like, uh-huh. Like you
well,
knew
I
this.
Knew Rutledge, and I actually am a graduate of the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City. So.
See, I know John Jay.
Yeah.
Because of the New York connection.
Right.
William Cushing of Massachusetts, John Blair of Virginia, Robert Harrison of Maryland, and James Wilson of Pennsylvania are the associate justices.
Yeah, so there we go.
Supreme Court.
There you go.
How exciting is that?
That is. Yep. Yeah, you got it. Got it right today.
I love when you say that I got it right. So did you have any extras?
I don't. No.
No? Okay. All right. So we've got Jimmy Pearson, who is the librarian, head guy at the Astoria Public Library. So in case our visitors don't know who you are, I've never met you, I've never heard of you, who is Jimmy Pearson?
Wow.
And why is it Jimmy instead of James?
You know, I would love to ask my parents. In fact, you can call her because Max, she loves your voice. I was all excited the first time I appeared on your show and said, Mom, I'm on the radio. And she's like, oh my God, I could just listen to that Mac Burns forever. Oh, you were there too? And yeah, I'm your firstborn. She really loves Mac because it's just Jimmy.
Well, come on now. Who doesn't?
Yeah. It's, I could tell you about what your staff says, but I won't. It is Jimmy. It is given. It is Jimmy Francis Pearson, and that's just what it was. And I would give a dollar if I could go back in time and be James, especially in the Army. You go to different places when they're typing things before computers, and they get through all of the legal documents, and you've got to sign it. It has to be perfect, and you have to tell them it's not James. Oh, the looks you get from the women and the clerks that are typing. They're so mad at you. And then if you're in the South, they use the IE version versus the Y.
Oh, no. Wow.
Yes. Yeah, so, nothing like having to have a life insurance document prepared, and then they screw it up twice. I was not popular. So anyway, I am the... 14th city librarian for the city of Astoria. I found out that fact a few weeks after I arrived. And when I was assigned my parking space over in the city parking lot, I had the choice between 13 and 14. I chose 14. And then about 3 weeks later, found out I am the 14th city librarian. Coming out of Denver, Colorado, where I retired from the Army and was working for the Denver Public Library. We came here on vacation, 2016. Fast forward, going on... 4 years, almost 6 months.
Okay, but you jumped over. You were in the Army. How do you make the leap from being a career military guy to I want to be a librarian.
Stand in the engineering center and school library in Fort Leonard Wood and see the really cool cabinet they have for the older items to preserve the humidity and the temperature, or control the humidity and temperature. And you ask the person, and she sees you, and she goes, "You want to see inside?" I'm like, "Yes." And you just fall in love with it and kind of have a passion for it. So I was in the Army, got out, went in the reserves, and was working at the Houston Public Library, and had a chance to go back on active duty, finish my 20 years active versus 20 years reserves, and I did, and so here I am. A huge stretch, because here's a fun fact that not all of my Army buddies know, so I know they're not going to be listening tonight. I was a children's librarian for 3 months. And I can tell you this, I'm really good at story time because you treat the kid just like lieutenants. But crafts, I am not your man. I can't do popsicle sticks, pop balls. Not my forte.
So what was your favorite story to read to the kids?
I actually, you know, just depending on that day, but I like Where the Wild Things Are.
Oh, that's good.
You know,
good,
that's
classic.
A really cool one, but... It just depends on the day and the kids.
Yeah. Okay. Kids like anything for the most part, as long as you use the correct voices and, you know.
That's right.
Exaggeration, use your arms and everything. So I'm sure Jimmy would do just fine at that.
And do your kids like that one, Where the Wild Things Are?
No. My kids don't. It's just a little too creepy still.
See? Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
I've always been fascinated that that's one of the most popular stories.
It is, yeah.
I kind of would be freaked out.
It is classic. But yeah, it's almost a little, like, the pictures are just a little too good.
Yes. So. Well, the artwork is cool.
Yes.
But as an adult.
A little too believable.
It's cool. Okay. So talk a little bit about the differences, because the Denver library that you were at, Denver City Library?
Yes. City of Denver.
And the Astoria City Library, I'm assuming, are pretty similar size-wise and everything.
No, I actually, nice. You got me there. I was actually thinking seriously about the response. No, the branch I managed in Denver before coming here was a 26,000 square foot Green Valley ranch out by the airport. Coolest thing I had there was a cockpit of a 707 that United was giving away. It was reached its lifetime. And they said, "Oh, you're building a branch out by the airport. Do you want this cockpit that we used for training?" And I was like, "Yes." So I, one day when I first arrived, we didn't let an adult in it, but of course it was before we opened, and I got to sit in it. And then one day I actually went in and had a social media inspiration and put picture books of snakes on the windows.
Took
a picture and posted it to our account, said snakes on a plane, like, you know, Samuel L. Jackson, there you go. So the size is one thing, and also Denver's part of a system. So of course the revenue stream is a lot higher. Ours is, you know, part of a city library, so it's a little bit different.
So what appealed to you about the Astoria Public Library? Because you could have stayed at Denver, you could have gone other places.
You know,
was it the library itself? Was it the community?
I think it was a combination of all three. I had, at that time, I was looking for a different position or a higher level position in library world. I was a branch manager, so I knew I wanted to at least move into like a regional director or regional manager or deputy director or something. And we had not had a vacation in a couple of years. My wife is a Goonies freak. Apologize for the listeners that have already heard this. We came here in March of 2016 because she had missed the 30th anniversary. And here we are. We're down in Cannon Beach today. We come up here for a Wednesday. I go to get a haircut at the 11th Street Barbers. Then I go to the library, and here we are. So just a combination of the area, the people. I mean, we love it. I mean, what's not to love in this area?
So when you were vacationing here, you didn't know that there was a job opening?
Had no clue.
Oh, how neat. What
a great... We checked out of the hotel at Cannon Beach on Thursday morning, came, and it was... They had told me, the staff at the library told me the day before on Wednesday, "Hey, you're a librarian. Our director's retiring." And they gave me her card, and... My wife was like, "Do you want to go see her?" And I'm like, "No, I'll just email her." She goes, "We're 20 minutes away." Come up here, and I had Jane Tucker. You can attest to this. It was, what, a 2.5-hour conversation?
Oh, wow.
My wife actually came in the library after about an hour and 20 minutes, said, "What's going on?" I said, "I don't know. She's telling me about the library." Here we are, and we absolutely love it.
Wow.
I love origin stories like that.
I know.
How people found this place.
Well, and the fact that you loved it first. Because some people, they take the job first and then they fall in love with the area or not. Yeah. But the fact that you loved it first is kind of neat. That then you were able to find something here.
Well, it's really crazy how things just, I really think that things happen for a reason. And, you know, then I find out later digging into the archives that Ernest and Eva Wicks Brown, they wanted to build the library. So when Lord Astor gave the $100,000 to the city, went back to England, said, do whatever you want. The city said, we'll build a library. Eva and Ernest, he sent a letter to council, said, hey, we want to be part of this and want to build the library. And they list their resume. And on Ernest's resumes, he designed a building in Michigan, the Washtenaw County building, as one of his projects that he listed. No big deal, no connection at all. My parents were married in the Washtenaw County building by one of the county judges. My dad was a Navy recruiter in Ypsilanti, Michigan, went to the coffee shop across the street from the building, met my mom. The rest, I work in a building designed by the man that designed the building my parents were married in.
Oh, neat. Wow.
What a small world.
Yeah.
But I understand you're looking for a new job. Because you were texting me during the inauguration last week and a half ago, and I wasn't watching it live. You were apparently taking a sick day, but all of a sudden I get a text saying I want the job of the guy cleaning the podium. And then when I watched later, I was like, that guy is cool. He was like, oh, he was really, really well dressed, and he was going up and wiping down the podium.
Pretty sure he was one of the sergeant of arms or somebody for the Capitol building itself. But yeah, Mac and I love history. So
I could see you doing that job, though.
Yeah, exactly.
It seems like it'd be fun to go up and like just wipe down the podium in between every speaker. You right there, you can hear everybody.
Right.
Yeah. You got the best seat in the house.
Speakers are the incoming president.
Yes, and they're all very appreciative.
They're all there, whatever. So like from a historic point of view, yes, I did. I took a vacation day actually to be off to watch it because not a political statement, but I love history. I love presidential history. And that was a moment in time for our country. So yeah, you want to be the announcer and I want to be the podium guy.
I just like other people are talking about like Lady Gaga and the young poet and you're talking about the guy cleaning the podium.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Although I have to admit, I did like the guy with the announcing voice.
Yeah.
That guy had an amazing voice.
Yes.
Everyone please be seated. I was digging that guy. But anyway, we're getting sidetracked. Sorry.
Yes, we are.
But I just love the random text. I want the job cleaning the podium. I was like, what are you talking about? Because I had no idea you were watching. So
there you go.
It made me laugh. Okay. So you get here and then just 3.5 years later, we have a pandemic. And suddenly what's happening with the library?
So we are finding our way through the pandemic. Down to 4 staff members. One of us are Suzanne is 20 hours a week. The rest of us are full time. So it's been a roller coaster in the very beginning with the Realm study. It's this nationwide study that he did for how does a virus live on library materials. We were quarantining items for 72 hours. Now Oregon Health Authority and all the alphabets behind their names say overnight is good enough. 24 hours is golden. Changed the way our workflow. And that was just last month or November or whatever. So we are right now restricting people to holds pickup only, but we're hoping to reopen for browsing soon. People seem to appreciate it. We actually are proud of providing a normal service during a pandemic. And I also have approval to expand staff by 1 or whatever. And we're going to hopefully be opening Monday through Friday in the near future.
One of the things you did over the summer was you worked with some of the other libraries. Mm-hmm. And so now if you're a member of any of the libraries, you can check out at any of the libraries.
Yes.
So I have a Warrenton card myself and I use the Seaside Library and always have since I work in Seaside. And that's very convenient. Tell me a little bit about that and what people need to do or what they can do.
So the city councils and the county have all agreed it's a memorandum of understanding and we can come together as the 3 separate libraries, Astoria, Seaside, and Warrenton, and cooperate in provision of those services. And we formally became the Northwest Library Cooperative last year in a document, which we're cooperating together to the point where, yes, 1 July last year, you can now carry your card into Seaside and check out. You can carry into Warrenton and check out. You can return those items at any of the libraries. There's a courier route that runs twice a week. It's something that we're very proud of because for convenience, I've had a lot of people coming in from Seaside that work in Astoria so they can come over when we're open and get it, you know, when we're open and operating, you know, full thrust at 8 hours a day, mm-hmm. it's going to be really great. Right now, it's really nice because each branch covers hours. Like Seaside's not open on Mondays. If we go to open, we, you know, be warranted and us. So that kind of helps people. It gives them options.
And with this program, like Alana can pick up a book in Seaside, and then when she's recording this radio show, can drop it off at your place on the way home.
Yep, she sure can.
See, yeah. That's wonderful. And then they could also request. They don't have to actually drive to Seaside to get that book.
Right.
And we've had that service for a while, right? Where we've been able to get books from all of... I mean, that's been a nice service.
So when it was nice, and I can tell you, before the courier came into play, it was the library directors taking the items around to the different buildings. And so once a week, one of us would do the route, and you have to go from Astoria to Warrenton, Warrenton, Seaside, Seaside, Warrenton, Warrenton, Astoria. And just in the summer, I mean, it's so not cost-effective. And now having a courier... and coming together and sharing the catalog electronically has saved us the money here in Astoria to pay for my portion of the courier, and it did that for all the other libraries as well. So it's a cost-saving measure, but it's also convenience.
That's nice. And then both Astoria and Seaside, correct me if I'm wrong, also are part of Interlibrary. Is it so basically like any book anywhere, if I want it and you don't have it, you can get it for me.
So Astoria, that's one of the things that was impacted by COVID.
Okay.
We were right there ready to offer the interlibrary service. I had made the decision that we were going to start with nonfiction items, because the difference between Seaside and Astoria staff-wise, we both have about the same size staff, but Esther's staff, the majority of hers are full-time, where the majority of mine are part-time. So she's able and has more capacity for things like that. So she has a person and probably spends about 30 hours a week on interlibrary loans. And I just don't have that capacity, but we do have the ability once we get fully staffed that we can do a limited basis. Now with this is a difference between Seaside and Astoria. Seaside does not participate in the Oregon passport program. You can take your Astoria library card, and the libraries across the state that participate, you can get a passport card. So like you can go to the college, Clatsop, and get a card for there with your Astoria card, and you can check out a couple items. And if you're vacationing somewhere, you can do that. So we participate in that and honor those cards.
Great.
That's neat.
So we got Mac and Alana. We're talking with Jimmy from the library, and we'll be right back. We'll take a little break and we'll come right back.
February 2nd, 1907. The charming woman is not necessarily one perfect form and features. Many a plain woman who could never serve as an artist model possesses those rare qualities that all the world admires. Neatness, clear eyes, clean, smooth skin, and that sprightliness of step and action that accompany good health. A physically weak woman is never attractive, not even to herself. Electric Bitters restores weak women, gives strong nerves, bright eyes, smooth, velvety skin, beautiful complexion, guaranteed at Owl and Eagle drugstores for 50 cents.
February 13th, 1905. Russian baths. At the bathhouse on Astor Street, which are open both day and night, with separate accommodations for ladies, the best Russian baths in the city can be secured at moderate cost and the best of treatment. Professional rubbers are in attendance, and private rooms for the night can be secured. George Hill, proprietor.
And welcome back to Adventures in History. I'm Alana Quila here this evening with Mac Burns and our very, very special guest, Jimmy, who's joining us again. Jimmy was on our pre-inaugural show.
When we came to KMUN, yes. They wanted a sample.
And so I think that you should feel very special because they accepted us after hearing that.
That's right. You're the reason.
So if they hadn't liked your interview, we would not be sitting here today. So thank you. And thank
Probably
you for coming
they
back.
They hadn't liked Mac's voice.
No, it all comes down to Alana's professionalism.
There we go.
And then the rest of us. There's like Alana and then the rest of the goofballs who are on the radio show.
They keep showing
the
up every week.
And then we just get to talk into a mic.
That's right. So talk a little bit, because we do like history here.
Mm-hmm.
You're sitting on a whole basement full of history. And I know there have been a few articles and you've talked about this at different clubs and things like that. But talk a little bit about the vortex, how that was created, and what all's down there, and what are you doing about it?
So when I first started, I could tell you honestly that there are areas in the basement you couldn't walk into, and we've taken a lot of time and effort with different volunteer groups. The leadership class at the Astoria High School went through things, recycled items. Mac can tell you his first tour with me or whatever. He said at the door, good luck, you've got 3 to 5 years. Well, we're here, and John Gutenberger just wrapped up a complete inventory of the index or the items in the vortex. We have 200 years of regional history, and it's organized, it's preserved, it's in acid-free materials and handlings or whatever, and we're getting ready, really excited. We have purchased our digital platform going forward, and for one of our grants, the IMLS grant, we have to put 500 items online, and we're in the process of doing that. Amazing, amazing work.
Sweet. How do you choose what goes online?
How
do you choose what you're going to put online?
John is in the process of that. I've asked Eric Williams to identify some items since he was the one that scanned a lot of them. So we're going to build a collection around him of his favorites. We're going to probably focus on some of the items you've already seen. If you go to our Facebook page, John did some videos of Rachel for the Oregon Cultural Foundation grant. Probably highlighting a Russell Dark collection, some of the items in that nature, but everything to do with the library history, building, that will be part of the first initial 500, and then pretty much we're focusing on what's cool and what's going to get people attracted to it.
And who gets access to that collection then when it's online?
I'm sorry?
Who gets access to it?
When it goes online, it'll be everyone. It'll be a website that we'll have a link to, and you'll be able to go, and it's for researchers.
Great.
Mac, we have a conversation coming up because I just spoke to Rachel. We're talking about grants for a regional focus, which is next. We've talked about it. Mm-hmm. What does that look like if we all cooperate to get things out there and highlighted for researchers?
Yeah, because we've got some of our stuff online that we've been working on this for about a year as well on the Internet Archives, which is part of our, if you go to our website and then click, you can go to it. And I don't know how many objects we've got, but probably 501.
Yeah. Nice. Well, I'm going to do 503 just because.
Cooperative and competitive.
What's the latest book to your added to the library's collection?
So I was handed a book and told that I needed to take it back with me. It's The Festival of the Sea by Akira Yoshimura.
He's a best-selling Japanese author.
And it's regarding Randall McDonald.
And it's a gift from the Friends of McDonald. But what's your favorite item in the collections of the library?
I really like seeing the construction photos, and I really am passionate about the history of the library. So I have pretty much something representing every previous library director going all the way back to Catherine Chennett Barker IV in 1919.
Wow. Okay. So we've got just about a minute left. Give me the 30-second elevator speech. Everything's online. Why do we need libraries anymore?
Oh, man, because what happens when the power goes out or your internet's down and you can't go online and you've got a candle and you're going to be sitting there, you know, candle for warmth and also enough light to be able to read something. Can't do that with a phone when it's dead.
Well, even those ebooks, I check them out from the library. I'm not going to buy them all. That's wonderful.
I thought you'd say something about around the kids' literacy.
That too.
Oh, no.
Well, thank you, Jimmy. We are so glad you came back again to talk to us. So we'll have that T-shirt for you next time, of course, right, Mac? Well,
it's the Fiverr Club.
It is.
Fiverr Club.
So he's got to come five times.
An adventure in history. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you both. I appreciate it.
Go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.